Back on Get Up. Before we start a new hour, hey, Jay Will, D Wood, everybody, just watch. This is Luka Doncic in warm-ups yesterday, throwing the ball off.
This is driveway stuff right there.
The confidence to throw the ball at the monitor and not break it.
How many times do you think he's tried this before?
That's a max play thing.
Like I said, remember when I went to MSG and saw Luka?
Point. He could have done some damage.
I saw the best play I've ever seen. Like, this doesn't surprise me with Luka.
He's insane. What was the commercial that Michael Jordan
did?
Nothing but net.
Nothing but net,
off the thing, off the thing.
Like so good.
But they were kidding. I mean, Luka's actually doing it. Off the scoreboard. Off the scoreboard. Off the backboard. Into the net. Nothing but net.
I would break the scoreboard, though. It would not be good.
Richard Jefferson once broke a monitor in here, in this room. That's a true story.
That was a great
day. Bart almost broke one the other day.
Yeah, we almost fired Brandon as a result of it. Anyway, with that, we welcome you to Get Up, presented by ESPN Bet. What a morning we got working. We have absolutely everything going on, but it begins with Cinderella. There is nothing better in March Madness. NC State, whose season was this close to being over in the ACC tournament. They lost 14 games this year, but Jay Will and Seth Greenberg, they have caught fire at the right time.
I mean, just think about DJ Horn and DJ Burns. Two names that are synonymous with what the best run, frankly, that I've ever seen in the NCAA tournament.
Well, DJ Burns is really something else. And then they get nice, chip-ins from so many others here. Ben Middlebrooks was all over the floor. Michael O'Connell knocking down a three. But Burns stealing the show.
Yeah, shout out to you, Michael O'Connell. Rising Stars, my AU program back here in Long Island. But DJ Burns, I call him America's big man. Yeah. There's nobody with better personality and better character in the tournament than DJ Burns.
And his dad loving it. Look at him there, 29 points for DJ Burns Jr. and NC State, again, whose season was an eye blink from being over in the game against Virginia in the ACC tournament. They needed a miracle three to send it to overtime. Their season would have ended then. Instead, here they are, 14 losses, and they are into the Final Four. That is the most by any team ever. And you know what? There were those of us old enough to remember it, Seth Greenberg, and you and I are among them, that when we hear miracle run, NC State, no one expected it, it just brings back memories of Jim Valvano and it puts a smile on your face.
Absolutely, Greedy. You know, Jim Valvano grew up one town over from where I grew up. I've known him since I'm 13 years old. I could see Jimmy V up there going, let me tell you something. They didn't think we were going to get it done, but I'll tell you, we figured out a way. And they did. They figured out a way. The hardest playing, toughest team. DJ Burns making play after play after play, getting every single 50-50 ball in the second half. And then Burns, he's impossible. You defend him one-on-one, it is a nightmare. And that's the biggest surprise to me. Duke never made an adjustment. You have to have agility. When a guy is taking over a game like he took over the game, you've got to run a double at him, make him a passer. You can rotate to a shooter. But DJ Burns, Jay Will said it actually at the beginning of the tournament. Said at the end of the NCAA tournament, everyone will know who DJ Burns is. But it's this NC State team as well as DJ Burns. It's Michael O'Connell. It's DJ Horn. It's the collective responsibility has been absolutely fun to watch.
And watching the game, what surprised me the most, Duke knows this team, obviously. This was the third time they played each other in a month. Duke looked like they lost their composure. I don't mean it critically. Like their shot selection, their shot making, they couldn't throw anything in the basket. They got in foul trouble. They couldn't deal with Burns. That was a tough day for Duke yesterday when everything was set up for them.
I mean, DJ Burns has owned Kyle Filipowski the last two times they played. It got him into foul trouble both times. Sean Stewart was one guy that game at NC State that actually played him pretty well. But think about this. I mean, they came into the ACC tournament on a four-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they won five games in 5 days, people at home. Like, they won nine straight games. Think about some of the teams. They ran through UVA. They ran through Duke. They ran through North Carolina, Texas Tech, Marquette, Duke again. And now we're going to talk about them going against Zach Edey. And everybody's going to say, hey, like, great run. I'm not putting anything past this team anymore. I'm throwing my bracket out the window. I'm tired of making all these, presumptions about this team. That is going to be a matchup to watch because DJ Burns feels like he can score against anybody in the nation, and nobody has been able to stop him thus yet.
NC State was 500-1 to win the championship early in the month of March. And here they are. They're going on that run. What was the Connecticut team that did the same thing, right? They went the crazy
Kemba Walker,
big – the Kemba Walker team had that kind of run in the Big East, and then they just sort of
– Kevin Keats was going to be fired.
Yeah.
It was written on – Steph, it was on paper. They were going to fire him. If Mike McConnell doesn't make that shot against UVA, I'm not sure he is still the head coach for – the North Carolina State Wolfpack.
Instead, now here they are on to the Final Four.
Look, you got me doing this now. Now I'm pulling for the ACC.
Kevin Keats is. Let's go.
The Duke has had their season ended now in a 3-year span by North Carolina and North Carolina State. On, that's got to hurt.
Keep my energy high.
No, you got to
be painful.
High. I'm just saying.
Bringing me back down to the.
No, look, what can I
Greeny,
tell you?
You can't do that to him, Greeny. You just can't
in the meantime,
do it to him. He's a mess.
Let's talk
Cooper
about.
Cooper Flag, we're coming next year.
The other things that we saw this weekend. We saw an unbelievable performance from Zach Edey and Purdue. They're on their way. We saw Alabama get into the Final Four for the first time in school history. And then we saw, Seth, UConn go on a 30-0 run against an Illinois team that we watched all year that won the Big Ten championship, that looked like maybe they were going to be the one team who could give Connecticut a game. And then they hit them with a 30-0 burst, dominant on both ends. How do we describe, Seth, what we are seeing from these defending champs?
Relentless, dominating, focused, locked in. I mean, all the words that Danny Hurley talks about his team, they go to that locker room, they kind of refocus and decide what they're going to give, what they're going to take away. They're the most dominating team right now in this tournament I can remember. A 30-0 run, are you kidding me? Yeah, I've had a couple of those against me in terms of when I was the team that had a 30-0 run against. But, I mean, like, what they did and how they did it. And the defensive game plan of Danny Hurley really was one of the reasons why. He defended a guard with Donovan Clingan. So Clingan was in front of the rim. He was like a human backboard. You could not get to the front of the rim. He said, no soup for you. You had no chance of getting to the front of the rim. Yet, Illinois continued to challenge him. Eventually, the light bulbs got to go on in your head and say, that might be a bad idea. Maybe a runner, maybe a pull-up, maybe a kick out for three, but they've been dominating offensively in terms of their execution, how they play. They play differently than everyone else, and dominating defensively.
People at home, if you want a modern-day coaching version of Petty LaBelle, not Patty, Petty LaBelle.
There you go.
That is Dan Hurley, okay? There was a former player that played for Illinois that put out a tweet that said, you know, UConn has never faced a team as physical or a player like Terrence Shannon Jr. And this dude, Dan Hurley, you talk about a star, goes to the post-press conference afterwards, recites the tweet, and we're like, obviously, they don't know the beasts and the monsters we have. He finds anything and everything
I know.
To motivate his team. That's where we're at with this team.
I read the tweet. It was actually benign. But the tweet itself was not. I mean, it was actually more – He got upset by it, Dan Hurley. He has a right to get upset by anything he wants. It really wasn't a shot at his team
at all.
And yet that's what Dan Hurley is finding. So I guess my question is, do they get challenged, Seth? I mean, we got two games left. They'll get Alabama, and then they get the win. You know, they're going to get a big guy one way or the other, whether it's Purdue or NC State. Do they wind up getting pushed late? Will we find them in trouble late in a game at any point next weekend?
Dan Hurley is Saban-esque. I mean, that in terms of his attention, detail, his focus, and you know how he creates causes. The one team that could give him a problem is the team they're going to play, because the team they're going to play plays differently than anyone else, and that's Alabama. I mean, they're going to make 18 threes. They're going to try to get up probably 30 or 40 threes. 50% of the shots come from three-point line. They could go with a small lineup and spread them out. Having said that, I think they're the best team in the field. They'll be the most prepared for any team they could face. But Alabama is the one team that I would say that would be difficult to prepare for.
I'm so disappointing you. You've been talking all year long. It's about it's Purdue, not Purdue. Believe in Purdue. Believe it.
And now you're going to sit
here on national TV and tell me it's Alabama? And you're going to just look over Zach Edey? Did you hear him yesterday at the post-press conference?
Fights.
Come on.
I finally, the light bulb in your head finally went on. Style makes fights. Different style. Identity's a little bit different.
He's definitely not going to look over Zach Edey. I'll tell you that much. He couldn't see over Zach Edey if his life depended on it. That's a whole other conversation. In the meantime, so the men's Final Four is set. The women's Final Four is halfway there. Two teams have already moved on to Cleveland. NC State, what a spring it has been on that campus. They took down Texas. South Carolina, meanwhile, still perfect. They continue their dominance. So those two schools are in the Final Four. Now, tonight, we get the 3-seed UConn against the 1-seed USC. two of the best players in the country going head-to-head, Paige Bueckers and Juju Watkins. That's the nightcap tonight. The earlier game is the rematch of last year's national championship game, LSU taking on Caitlin Clark in Iowa. It's the eighth championship game rematch in the NCAA tournament the following year. Iowa is a very slim favorite. Caitlin Clark, of course, is the player that everybody knows and talks about, and you see where she stands on the all-time leaderboards in NCAA tournament history. She has a chance to add to all of those. But let's dive into this thing a little bit here. Andrea Carter and Shanae Agumuke, good enough to get up super early with us. Guys, thank you. I know it's going to be a very long day into the night. We talked earlier this morning, and it occurs to me, Andrea, that while Iowa is a 1.5-point favorite, the momentum feels to me, like the zeitgeist feels to me like they're an underdog in this game. How do you see it?
That's exactly what Shanae said earlier. It does feel that way, and it could be partially because LSU, they're the reigning national champions. They have the title from last season, and they're coming in with that, hey, we've done this already. They're coming in with that energy. So, Shanae, I would completely agree with you. Greeny, I agree with you. It just feels like LSU has a little bit of the edge, and I also think because everybody's looking at this Iowa team, like, what can Caitlin do? At times, it feels like it's Caitlin against LSU when in reality, it has to be the entire Iowa team if they want to get a win.
That's absolutely correct. And I've been saying it everywhere. It's the NCAA tournament, and the two A's actually stand for Angel Reese and Anissa Morrow. So, yes, you're seeing Caitlin Clark here. She will have to do everything and then some because she's going up against an LSU squad that has the Bayou Barbie and Angel Reese. Y'all, I'm an offensive rebounder as a player. She puts that to shame. My numbers. She averages 19 and 13. They have the luxury of size in this matchup, and I think that can be the differentiator.
You know, Greeny, I got a slight headache because we played against Shanae in college and she put up 30 points and 20 rebounds. So she does know how to speak to offensive rebounding, and it just took me back to a bad place. So we got to reset really quickly.
All right, so you two have gone head-to-head. Obviously, these two teams won head-to-head last year, and it was such a fascinating game, and people will remember so well the Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark part of it and all that kind of stuff. So what are we looking for tonight in that piece of it, Shanae? Talk to me about the psychological piece of this matchup for these two teams and programs because they know each other well.
It's funny because I feel like for everyone that's watching, all the fans throughout the nation, this is a rivalry and there's even some emotions, there's some feelings. But what I love is these ladies understand what the moment means. I said this before. Actually, you know what's crazy? It was you, Drea, that said it. There's no Caitlin Clark without Angel Reese, and there's no Angel Reese without Caitlin Clark because they fuel off of their energy, trying to elevate each other's games. Iowa, Caitlin Clark, iconic, the greatest women's basketball scorer we've ever seen. It's been motivated off of the failure of last season. Angel Reese taking the spotlight, having that chip on her shoulder. They have helped each other's games, and they said it themselves, Drea. You know what? There's no hate here. We understand that we are doing great things for women's basketball overall.
Yeah, I love what both of these superstars have said. For Angel to be like, listen, we're going to talk our trash on the court, and we could kick it after. Like, they have an understanding of the moment. Coming into this tournament, people were asking me what my favorite part was, and I said that the superstars are ready to meet the moment. And I fully believe we're going to see that tonight. Both teams have to execute. We've seen both teams need to execute in certain ways. We don't even need to get in the basketball part right now, but these two going at it is going to be really special.
Just like we always go at it in studio, me and Drea, point guard, yeah. You know what it is. She put some buckets up at Tennessee, too. So respect to her game.
Here's the thing. South Carolina's been the best team in the country all year long. They deserve that. This feels like a heavyweight championship fight, though, tonight, right? It just doesn't feel like it should be an Elite Eight game. This has all the makings of a bigger night than that. Guys, thank you very much. We'll be watching you all day long. And we've got both games tonight, okay? So we've got LSU and Iowa, which is the matchup that we've been waiting for since last year's championship game. That's the early spot tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern. Then, as I mentioned, we got Paige Bueckers and Juju Watkins. That takes a backseat to nothing. That's 9 o'clock Eastern time tonight, right after the first game wraps up. So it may be the most anticipated night of women's college basketball ever, and all the action is coming away on ESPN. Meanwhile, speaking of anticipation, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets have me excited about what they might do. They made another move over the weekend. We'll talk about exactly what it could mean. Plus, LeBron goes scorched earth in Brooklyn last night. Still doing it after all these years. You'll see the highlights as we roll on. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back to Get Up. We are live from the Seaport, brought to you by Grey Goose Squad. This is just a tiny little collection of what we have working this morning. Graziano, let's go through some overreactions here around the NFL right now, because there's a bunch of stuff. If I were to say that the Cowboys' biggest concern is their running game, would that be an overreaction?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, look, they have to run it better. They have to stop the run better. I think they have to rebuild an offensive line that was dominant for a long time and has lost some key pieces. Obviously, that ties into the running game, but I think the concern is bigger than that. I think you can find a running back in the draft. I think that they will. Maybe they sign one of the veterans still out there. Maybe that's Zeke Elliott. We will see. But no, I think the Cowboys have to focus on rebuilding that offensive line for the sake of their run game and their passing.
Yeah, Jeremy Fowler suggesting there's mutual interest between Zeke and Dallas in a reunion. In the meantime, is it an overreaction if I were to say the Green Bay Packers are the biggest threat to dethrone the 49ers in the NFC?
Yes, because the Packers are still chasing Detroit in their own division, and I think the 49ers are going to get a threat from the Rams in their own division, and I think the NFC is a little more stacked than we might have thought it was a year ago. Green Bay is an exciting young team. They're still a young team. We'll see. I mean, the quarterback has proven he can play. The coach has obviously proven he can coach at a high level. So I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. But I think the NFC field is a little more crowded than that to just say the Packers are the biggest threat.
And then finally, if I say that with the addition of Haason Reddick from the Eagles on Friday, the New York Jets will have the best defense in the National Football League this season, would that be an overreaction?
A lot of pressure on this one. No, it's not an overreaction. And you know why? Because they were already a candidate for that title.
Yes.
And they add a player that could be a high-impact player,
yes,
in the pass rush. Which, I mean, even as good as they've been, like, have they had that elite pass rusher?
No.
They rotate guys in and out. So he has been an elite pass rusher for most of the last however many seasons. What, 4 or 5 seasons?
Like, yeah.
What'd you say, D-Wood? 3 straight seasons, double-digit sacks?
Four straight seasons
with double-digit sacks. So, yeah, I think the Jets were already one of the best defenses in the league, and this is the kind of player that can elevate them even further.
Will the New York Jets be the best defense in the NFL this season, yes or no, D-Wood?
I'm going to go yes.
Yes.
I'm going to go yes.
Yes, they will.
I mean, think about it. The Jets on all three levels have all pro players.
Yeah.
All three levels. I mean, it's rare that you can speak of any defense that has that. And as it relates to Haason Reddick, he's going to play less this year. Think about that. He's been a guy that's 4 straight years, has double-digit sacks. He's going to play less because the Jets like to rotate guys. And to me, less is more. He's going to be fresher. He's not going to be dropping back in coverage like he was doing in Philadelphia. He's going to get after the quarterback.
They'll keep him under 67% of the snaps.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, but if they lose games this year, that won't be Joe Douglas's problem. And that's the point. So let me come to you, Orlovsky, and what we were talking about earlier. Aaron Rodgers and that offense, assuming the offensive line is improved, I agree with what D. Wood said earlier, for those of you who are just joining us. I don't think they need to be outstanding. I think the Jets are going to be the best defense in the NFL, and I think so long as their offense is good to you know, average to above average, they have an excellent chance to be there late in the going. Dan, why do you see it differently?
Yeah, well, first of all, being late there in the going doesn't matter. This was to win the Super Bowl. I think, realistically, the only two teams that I feel have better rosters on paper than the Jets are the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. And so I've said this, like, it's the biggest dice roll in the NFL. If their health holds up, they can do it, Greeny. But we're sitting here telling you, mean to tell me that if you think the Jets' offense is average, they could beat Kansas City? Absolutely not.
Well, not on a given day. Let me make the point. They don't have to be – he doesn't have to be the MVP of the league. He has to have them against Kansas City in a playoff game, and then maybe Rodgers has to have a monster game. But I tell you what, Kansas City knocked out Lamar Jackson and company last year with their defense much more than with their offense, and that's what I think the Jets could do.
I would argue that Baltimore knocked out Baltimore more so than, you know, like much in that. Here's my point, Greeny. The last time we saw Aaron Rodgers play a meaningful throw was going to be 20 months ago. It was going to be January 9th. It's the interception versus the Detroit Lions. It's 2.5 years when this season starts since he's won MVP. But the Jets aren't going to get to the AFC Championship game if he doesn't play somewhat close to that MVP level. And it only will happen if their offensive line protects him. You know, like Brady goes to Tampa Bay. It was the most cohesive offensive line in the NFL. There's a reason why Brady played so unbelievably well. The Jets can play in the AFC Championship game. They got to stay healthy, and Rodgers has got to play fantastic football.
I want to say this. A lot of older quarterbacks, the biggest beneficiary, the guy that usually helps those guys is a running back, running game. Yeah. I think of all the moves that the Jets made, the biggest beneficiary is Breece Hall. Breece Hall coming back off of ACL last year had the second most scrimmage yards in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm. Not only that.
Off of ACL. Now a year removed, if those guys stay healthy up front, which that's the biggest question.
Right. Sure.
Breece Hall could have an absolute monster year.
Not only that, but Graziano, help me if I'm right. Did Tom Brady and the Buccaneers win the Super Bowl that year because their offense was so outstanding or because their defense was outstanding? They got red hot. Their defense was spectacular.
Did.
And Brady did all the things that needed to be done in the moments they needed to be done. And Rodgers could be the blueprint here for Aaron Rodgers.
It could. Look,
you
trade for Aaron Rodgers thinking you're going to get something like the MVP Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
I think that's the whole point that Orlovsky's trying to make, and I agree with him. If you're going to win in the AFC, you have to be able to overcome Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen. You've got to have a guy that can go in there and stand toe-to-toe with those guys. And if something goes wrong, if one of those guys lights up your defense, as they absolutely can, you have to be able to outscore him.
Dan, quick final word, go.
Yeah, I think this is the most important draft as well for Joe Douglas and that regime. They got two picks in the top 100, number 10 and number 72. I think they got to absolutely grease those two picks or trade back to continue to rebuild and build up this roster depth-wise.
Offensive line. Do not take the tight end at 10. Take the offensive lineman. If you don't like the tackles, trade back and take the guard. And that's exactly what they should do. I'm 100% on line. But more offensive linemen. And bring D. Wood out of retirement also. All right, as we continue. Well, LeBron, did you see what he did last night? We'll take you through highlights of a practically unprecedented night for the King. And we got this. Maybe we'll bring in Graziano for some help, Jay.
Yeah, please. Legs is right here.
Which NBA player has the record for most points scored in his 30s? LeBron's got to be close, yeah?
You would think.
The answer's next.
I know this. I think I know this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Back at the bottom of the hour, you are watching Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. Okay, so Sneaky Hembo's coming for Jay Will today. I always like to bring in Graziano for moral support.
Good luck.
I don't think he needs me.
No, because Jay thinks he knows
it. He has a lot of confidence.
So here's the question. We're about to talk about LeBron James having a monster night last night at the age of 39. So the question is, which player has the record for most points scored in his 30s?
Well, MJ retired a couple times in the 30s.
Yeah, it's not going to be Michael Jordan. He retired twice in his 30s.
I'm going to go Karl Malone.
Oh, my God, that's right. It's Karl Malone.
Legs, we're on it.
Legs, give it to you.
Legs is on it.
Karl Malone. Follow.
It's a four in a row.
It's Karl Malone. Thought I knew it, and I had it.
Karl Malone is first. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is next. LeBron James
being here
is third.
I'm happy to help. Anything I can do.
LeBron James, by the way, added 40 to his total last night. Roll the highlights, Cindy. Get Legler over here. Lakers and Nets in Brooklyn, and it started unbelievably fast. Legs, the Lakers jumped out to a 17-0 lead in this game.
And it was a wrap, 17-0, two touchdowns and a field goal right off the bat. Listen, the Lakers have been more serious about their approach, and they're starting to round in to form exactly when they need to.
And then how about, Jay, LeBron dialing it up from deep. He had a career-high 9 threes in this game.
I mean, just one of two players in Lakers franchise history to have multiple games, four or more of 90% shooting from a three-point line, just really in his rhythm. By the way, the most telling thing, he looks down at the ball every time he's about to shoot, by the way.
Well, Legs, I mean, no one knows three-point shooting better than you do. What are you seeing in him right now? Because he really has added this. Right now, it feels like this is more a part of his game than it's ever been.
Agreed. Highest three-point percentage of his career. He just looks relaxed, comfortable, and confident from out there now, and he knows that it's got to be an important element of his game because this team needs his three-point shooting. They're not very good collectively.
40.7 rebounds, 5 assists. There you see it. Players with 40-point games since turning 39. The aforementioned Karl Malone's on the list, but only Jordan did it more times. He did those as a Wizard. Here's LeBron doing these as a Laker. And you know what? LeBron James gets plenty of attention. I'm not going to suggest that he doesn't, but sometimes I think what he's doing right now is actually underappreciated. Let's just bear in mind, I mean, LeBron James is 39 years old. And right now, like I just got my a notice, you know, we have our ballots for first team, second team, third team, all NBA. Like he's certainly going to be on one of those teams. He's playing at an all NBA level at the age of 39. Do you know how many players in history have done that? Zero.
Yeah.
It has never happened before. So the point, Jay, is that for all of his accomplishments, the longevity and playing at this level at this age, I think this is going to be a big deal on his resume.
Green, the thing that stands out for me, obviously as a podcaster, JJ Redick called Mind Games, is how surgical and tactical he is.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that, look, the body, him knocking down shots, that's an alien-like form, okay? I understand that. But the understanding of the game and how he's able to execute that level of understanding, that comprehension, is what really makes him stand apart other than different players. The game is just so simplified. You know, we used to have a thing called kiss when you're younger. Keep it simple, stupid. We used to say it all the time. He is the epitome of that with superhuman powers. It's what makes him special.
Yeah, I've said this about Jokic before, and I'll say the same thing about LeBron. Everything that he does is purposeful. There's no wasted energy or motion with anything that he does on a basketball court. So that helps him at this age be able to do the things that he does, because it'd be difficult if he played a different game where he pounded the ball too much and ISO'd a lot, took a bunch of tough mid-range jump shots. At that age, it'd be very difficult to be this efficient. He has simplified his game to the things that he loves to do. He defies everything we thought we knew about what you could do as a basketball player this long. He's defied all of that. There's no question about it. Is he underappreciated? I'm not sure about that, because we give him appreciation, I feel like, almost every day.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that would maybe, for some people, satisfy that would be if you finally said, he's better than Jordan. That's like the one thing left for him, because I think he gets plenty of attention and accolades and appreciation.
So, yeah, underappreciated was a bad choice of words by me. I don't know that people realize the historical significance of him doing this at this age.
I agree with that.
Look, he came into the league with Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade. Carmelo's in commercials. Dwayne Wade owns a team, for crying out loud. And LeBron is still one of the 10 best players in the world.
To your point, like, Luka Doncic has surpassed some of these early milestones as a scorer in his career, like, relative to the same age that LeBron was. But then you just got to ask yourself, is Luka going to want to do this that long? Is he going to be able to do this that long? And that's why it still is incredible to think about where this guy is and the level he's playing at. And, you know, he asked a question after the game about retiring, and he kind of seemed irritated by it. I don't blame him for being irritated. It's not on his mind. But at this level, why couldn't he play another two, three seasons at least?
Well, Leg, in answer to your two questions, is Luka going to want to do this long? Probably so. Is his body going to allow him to do it this long? That's going to be the question for him, because that's what makes this dude elite and different.
Speaking of guys whose bodies don't always cooperate, I have sneaky big news this morning. I was just told we have video of Joel Embiid going through a workout and full contact stuff. So you guys know what this stuff looks like. This is what we have of him here. All the stories that we're hearing out of Philly, and Legs, you know this better than anybody, are that they do anticipate getting Embiid back at some point here. So what are you seeing and what do you expect?
It's a lot more interesting conversation right now, because we look at some of these other teams in the Eastern Conference that we thought would be there, like, at full strength. They're not. This is, you talk about X factors all the time going into the postseason. This is the biggest X factor ever dropped in the history of the league on the NBA playoff scenario, like this close to the playoffs. He comes back and he looks fully healthy. Now, we are going to have to see about his stamina, minutes restrictions, like all of those things. But you're talking about a completely unstoppable offensive force that would give Philly a puncher's chance. Again, just like the West, avoid Boston. And with Joel Embiid, they're going to have a shot against Milwaukee, Cleveland, Orlando, the Knicks, whoever they get. With a healthy Joel Embiid, Philadelphia absolutely has a shot in that series.
I mean, you're talking about a force. You're talking about a guy that can absolutely take over a game. And by the way, him coming back allows Tyrese Maxey to play better, Oubre, all their talent that they have. Like, you're talking about Philadelphia being one of the most dangerous teams. It puts them in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, fully healthy, which might be too much to ask for, I would think they would be the favorite in almost any of the series you just described. Maybe not Milwaukee, we'll see. Certainly not Boston, but the Knicks, Orlando, Cleveland. But fully healthy, we're a long way from a fully healthy Embiid, but we'll keep an eye on it. Meanwhile, let me run the floor some of the other best moments. Legs, let's talk about Nikola Jokic. 26 points, 18 rebounds, 16 assists in a blowout win over the Cavs. So the Nuggets are the team to beat in the West. Of that, there is no question. Which team is the biggest legitimate threat to them in their conference?
I think it's Dallas. I think for a lot of reasons. I mean, the way that Luka's playing right now, out of his mind, the ebb and flow he's worked out with Kyrie, they're meshing, they're enjoying playing together. They've added depth and they've added defense here over this stretch. 11 out of 12. They are absolutely humming right now. Very dangerous team. And you're looking at a guy in Luka who can control a series on a level unlike any other player in the league, just like Jokic. So those two guys, if they ever matched up in a series, and I think Dallas could be the last team standing against them, man, does it get more compelling than that?
You buying the Mavericks?
I would agree with you on the Mavericks. I do not think Minnesota is too far off, though. I mean, not having Karl Anthony Towns, maybe it's more so the way they defend. Anthony Edwards is a beast, and not, you know, no having no timeline on Cat is a problem, but Rudy Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year, a guy that can control the middle of the paint, I think Minnesota will give them an issue, too.
Luka doing things, just ridiculous things on the floor last night. Another good game, the Knicks and the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander knocks down a shot at the very end here that winds up winning it for OKC. The Knicks' injury situation doesn't feel like it's getting better. Jalen Brunson has been brilliant, but where are we with the Knicks right now, Jay Will?
I mean, I think it's a dangerous time for the Knicks. I mean, obviously not having any front court, Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, OG not being on the court. He's a lockdown defender. I'm not sure if Shai Gilgeous makes that game-winning shot with OG's length and his presence on him, or at least the degree of difficulty is 3X on a shot like that. So I think it's troubled times, and it puts all the pressure on Jalen for his size to carry the load offensively, which is not his game at the being best, having options around him.
I agree. Like, where's the other scoring going to come from when they have to have it? Think about how things have changed for the Knicks. Remember when Milwaukee was struggling earlier in the year when they fired Adrian Griffin? We were talking about the Knicks potentially being the 2 seed at that point. Now, look, they have an opportunity right now to get caught by Orlando. They don't have the tiebreaker. They're one game up on the Magic. So you go from potentially getting the 2 seed before Randle got hurt to now looking at going on the road in the first round potentially if Orlando makes up this one game and has the tiebreaker against them. And again, I agree, it's just so much pressure on your point guard to have to continue to have all the big moments for you offensively. I don't think the consistency of that second score, the lack thereof, that is going to be a problem for the Knicks, I think, come playoff time.
And by the way, two legs, there's always a narrative that I hear fans talk about, like, oh, Jalen Brunson can't carry the load. It's never one person carrying the load. I mean, by the way, LeBron James used to do it, but there was a reason why he's in the conversation for the greatest ever, right, up there with Michael Jordan. So Jalen Brunson, undersized guard, it's a lot of pressure to carry.
They need another offense generator, and that's what Randle is. He is the other guy that can command double teams, that can win one-on-one matchups. That's where they struggle. Where is that going to come from? I love their grit. They play as hard as anybody every single night, but is it going to be enough?
Their depth was also a big strength, and you lose a bunch of that. Meanwhile, Draymond Green back on the floor, 21 points, 11 assists, 6 rebounds, and the Warriors beat San Antonio, albeit in what was a close game against one of the bottom standings teams. So how do we feel about this whole Draymond thing now, rearview mirror, Warriors going forward? Where are we?
Nothing has changed with the big picture conversations that are going to take place with this team over the summer, because I think they're going to have a hard time escaping the play-in regardless, and it's going to feel empty at the end of the year, and they're going to revisit that incident that happened in Orlando and just other incidents that have happened. And just looking at their team, there's going to be very difficult conversations made involving Draymond Green, I believe, this summer. This isn't going to change it. This just reminds us of what he's capable of and what they need him to be, like Steph Curry alluded to. And look, the Golden State Warriors are a team that they'd be dangerous to play in a play-in or a first-round best-of-7, but ultimately they just don't have enough.
Yeah, I would say it's a good win, obviously, against the Spurs, because Houston lost to Dallas, which you may mention of in the first hour. But at the end of the day, like, I still don't put value or trust in them to win a series if they're able to get through the play-in. I mean, it's such an uplifting thing to watch them play Steph Curry, because where he is at this stage of his career, still putting up those numbers, I just don't trust the pieces around him to come through. And at the end of the day, like, think about how we thought about them last year. Like, when you're going against some of the bigger teams in the Western Conference, they're going to look smaller.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have the size to combat the way the style is right now in the Western Conference.
Yeah, they have the veteran, savvy, but that can only take you so far. We'll see where they wind up. All right. We have much more to do as we continue here. It is NFL Draft Month. We're getting ready to do this thing, people. We've got the 5 biggest questions that will be answered by the time we touch the calendar next. Stick around. We're coming right back. Get up on ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt
the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
We're back on Get Up. We are presented by ESPN Bet. And it is a good bet that there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing between now and 3 weeks from Thursday, when we will all assemble in Detroit for round one of the NFL draft. And so what I've put together for you today on this April 1st, because we're in that month and there is no fooling about this, these are the 5 biggest questions that I believe exist as we head towards that draft. At number 5, I want to talk about the wide receivers. I feel like Marvin Harrison Jr. has been anointed the best receiver in this class for a very long time. I think there is at least some momentum that Malik Nabers, the kid from LSU, could surpass him. by that, I mean, I think there were some teams that think he's actually the better player and the better prospect. There's another superstar in the making coming out of Washington named Rome Odunze. So question number five for me is Marvin Harrison a lock to be the first wide receiver off the board? We'll see. Question number four, will Jaden Daniels supplant Caleb Williams as QB1? If you watch this show, you've heard Dan Orlovsky say it. You've heard Lewis Riddick say it. You've heard Damian Woody say it. A lot of people, if they had the first pick in this draft, would take Jaden Daniels. Is there any chance that the Bears or someone else wind up making Daniels the first pick in this draft and not Caleb Williams? Question number three is another quarterback who seems to be on the rise, and that is J.J. McCarthy. I'm old enough to remember when we didn't even know if he would go in the first round. Now, all of a sudden, is there a chance he breaks into the top three? It feels like the three of them, Williams and Jaden Daniels and Drake May, have been the big three and then everybody else for a long time. I'm not 100% sure every team sees it like that. Could J.J. actually break into that top three? I don't think it's out of the question. Question number two. Are we going to have four, five, or six quarterbacks drafted in round one? I don't think six is out of the question. I think four is a mortal lock, and five feels likely to me as well. Four, we assume, is J.J. McCarthy. We'll see. Five is Bo Nix. Six is Michael Penix. And that brings us to the number one question. Who's going to make the move? Teams are going to be trading for quarterbacks. We've seen the Vikings begin moving in that direction. There are so many teams that need them. There are so many teams that want them. There's such difference in the skill sets of each of these individual players. I believe there will be significant trades made between now and the night that these teams go on the clock. Could they happen on the clock, or will they happen in the buildup in April? We'll see. But I think there will be significant trades made for quarterbacks. So Orlovsky is here. Let's get Graziano and D. Wood into the conversation as well. Let's just dive into a few of those. Dan, let's talk about J.J. McCarthy. Because, you know, Jim Harbaugh said the other day, and he, of course, was his college coach, he plays quarterback better than any of the other quarterbacks in this draft. Sure. If you were doing the evaluation, could he break into your top three amongst this year's class?
He could, but you would have to be focused on the now rather than the future. You know, J.J. McCarthy, one of the sayings that I hate in draft season is, which guy is most pro-ready? Who cares? Who's going to be the best player? But what guy do you think is capable of taking that NFL playbook right now and being able to step into a huddle, recite it into a huddle, break it, that huddle, get to line of scrimmage and control that line of scrimmage, is J.J. McCarthy, because he's done it at Michigan. He's the guy that had to have two or three play calls in the huddle and make sure that at the line of scrimmage he got his offense into the right one. He's the guy that has played a ton under center and ran a ton of play action pass concepts and really ran a ton of play pass concepts rather than just RPOs. So there's a lot of J.J. McCarthy's game that, you sit there and go, that looks like what it looks like for so many guys at the NFL level. If you wanted to take a player and very quickly have him play like and probably production-wise a Kirk Cousins, it's J.J. McCarthy. The question is, how great is J.J. McCarthy's physical talent capable of getting him to? Is it capable of getting to a top five or six quarterback in the NFL? I don't feel that way. Is Drake Mays, if you hit on him, yes. But there's a lot more variance for the miss.
So it's the classic high floor versus higher ceiling, that kind of debate that they're in. And then there are a couple of particular teams, Dan. Let's run through them. Because the last question, of course, is the biggest one for football fans everywhere. Who's going to make these trades? What teams do we have a close eye on right now to be aggressive?
Minnesota Vikings, as you mentioned, already picked up another first-round pick. So they have the ability to move up that some other teams don't have. I'm watching them, and I'm watching the Las Vegas Raiders, who have a needed quarterback. Their head coach, Antonio Pierce, has a history with Jaden Daniels. You know, if he were to go – see what happened – we don't know how many of the first three picks are going to be for sale, right? Like, if it goes Caleb Williams to the Bears, Jaden Daniels to the Commanders, then Drake May, is he the guy you're trading up for? Or do you need it to be Jaden Daniels falling to three in order to make the trade up? So it really is a matter of who they want versus just we got to get up to get one of these guys.
And then the other team that a lot of people will talk about will be the Giants, who may be in the market. You were telling me earlier, the feeling is they like J.J. McCarthy.
That's been out there,
Question is, can they sit there at six and safely get him? I wouldn't sleep real well at night.
No.
you know, between now and then. So do you believe the Giants should be aggressively moving up, D. Wood, to make sure they can get the quarterback they want?
I do. I do, because I don't think Daniel Jones is a guy that will lead the Giants in the future. We know that Brian Daboll has to win now. And there's no guarantee if they go and get a rookie quarterback that he will be the guy, if they don't win, that will be, you know, responsible for developing whoever the said rookie quarterback is. But I think if you're the Giants and you're looking long term, they got to look past Daniel Jones. They got to get a guy that can be that you know, the guy that can lead this organization to the future.
So we can talk a lot about teams who need quarterbacks. And Dan Orlovsky, I want to talk about teams that don't. So Mike Tannenbaum brought this up on the show on Friday. And in general, if the Green Bay Packers have really hit on Jordan Love as big as we think they have, then they're going to be in the midst of a stretch where they've had like 45 years of top-level quarterback play consecutively, and a large part because they draft a quarterback while they still have one. So I know you love Michael Penix, Dan. Do you believe that a team that doesn't need a quarterback, some might say the Cowboys, some might say the Rams, looking at a team that doesn't need a quarterback right this minute, should be drafting a guy like Michael Penix and hoping he becomes Aaron Rodgers or he becomes Jordan Love?
Not in the first round.
No.
You know, to draft Michael Penix in the first round, again, with the – unless it's that last, you know, four or five picks and you're going back up into the first greenie, but with the injury history of his past, it's just a – it's as a general manager, a move that you sit there and go, this is really, really risky. Obviously, the selection of a quarterback is risky in and of itself. If Michael Penix didn't have the injuries, we would have five quarterbacks taken in the top five picks. But he does have the injuries. I don't think the Cowboys should take a quarterback in round one. I don't think the Rams should take a quarterback in round one. If you wanted to tell me the Cowboys and the Rams in round two, yeah, maybe. If you wanted to tell me the Patriots don't get a guy in round one, but in round two, or the New Orleans Saints, that's when I sit there and it makes a little bit more sense in round two rather than round one.
The important distinction is the Packers in 2020 did not sit there and go, oh, we need to take a quarterback in this first round. They said, we think Jordan Love can be a franchise quarterback in the NFL. We have a little runway because we still have Aaron Rodgers for a little while. So let's get this guy that we think that highly of. So if you have that guy, if you're the Cowboys or the Rams or whoever, and you're thinking beyond what you have now, I'm not saying the Cowboys are, but if, then, and you identify this is a potentially special player, then it makes sense. But not just to do it.
I have 10 seconds. Does Penix go in the first round, yes or no, D. Wood?
I think he does, man. Yeah. I know the injury thing, but, what he's done, right? His 2 years' body of work at Washington,
and his pro day was sensational. I'm out of time. First Take's going to take over coming up in a minute. These guys have so much more to say, and they'll get their chance to say it. Plus, NC State's Cinderella run. Is it the best we've ever seen? How long does LeBron have left to play? Stephen A. is back. Shannon, Jay, Will, Perk, and more. First Take next. All right, get up this morning, presented by ESPN Bet, the official sports book of ESPN. And as we finish our show today and First Take gets set to come on, Woj just dropped a bomb on Twitter. Yeah. Joel Embiid expected to play this week.
Oof.
The reigning MVP has been out since January 30th with the meniscus.
Getting interesting.
Stephen A. and company have it all next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.